Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Faith Focused Spanish Blog Show with your host, Faith Lane.
Great morning, and welcome to Faith Focused Spanish Blog Talk Radio. I'm super excited. I got Ms. Renee Cooper, the CEO of For My Voice Matters, and the author of Assassination Avoided Destiny. So I'm super excited to have her on the line. I just want to make a couple of announcements right quick, and then we're going to get started with the show. So if you're looking for any advertisement, promotions, commercials, radio interviews, radio spins, maybe for your business or entertainment, maybe you're author or life coach, you can contact me, Faith Lane, at 240-640-5492, or you can just email me at faithfocusedfinish, and that's at gmail.com. So this is an excellent global platform to be on. We actually have people in Ghana, Morocco, India, Nigeria, Trinidad, Europe, Uganda, Canada, Philippines, all of the United States that's listening in. So I'm super excited to have you guys in, listening on another day in another station with us. So, Ms. Renee Cooper, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. A little bit about Ms. Cooper. She's an advocate, an author, and a speaker. She's a woman of vision and a mission, and she's just allowing God to have his way. So I'm just super excited to have you on my show, Ms. Cooper.
I'm excited to be here, and it's an honor and a privilege. I really appreciate you and the connection that we made.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I actually connected with Ms. Cooper last week. I put a post up on my page, and she answered it about, you know, how many authors were on my page. And, you know, I just reached out to a couple of people, so I'm super excited that you were, you know, that you gave me the opportunity to have you come on my show.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Fit me in your busy schedule, I should say.
You know what? Look, I wish it was busier than what it seems like. How about that?
You should see me. I'll be on the run. Sometimes I'll be doing my station right from the car because I'm like, I'll be on the run all the time. So, so Ms. Cooper, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am, as you said, I am the founder and CEO of For My Voice Matters, which is a not-for-profit organization that is geared towards bringing awareness and education about domestic violence and also suicide prevention. I am a two-time international best-selling author through Amazon for the book Assassination Avoided, Destiny Defined. And I am a 15-year domestic abuse survivor, which caused me to get into start my organization.
Wow.
That's brief. That's brief. The top three things that I would say that's just right off the bat for me.
Yes, ma'am. Now, let me ask you, how many books, is this your first book or your second book?
It's my first book, laughing out loud, because pretty much everybody keeps saying there's another book inside of you, you should go in deeper, you should talk about other things that happened. So I don't know. I'm contemplating. I go back and forth after it seems like for me, and this is just me being transparent because I'm a very open person. It seemed like after I released the book last year, it opened up a bigger can of worms for myself, not necessarily pertaining to the book and the subject matter per se in the book, but just like I had to deal with self. I had to deal with a lot of issues that I had buried because the actual trauma happened in 2008, and it took me 10 years to write the book, 10 and a half years to write the book. So, you know, you have to go back through, and you have to deal with a lot of issues that happened during that time. I had to, you know, relive some of the abuse. I had to relive, you know, the tragedy, the traumatic incident that happened that kind of led me up to this point. So to write another book, I don't know. It's a thought, but I can't really say I really want to, because if you're dealing with issues like that, you have to dredge up stuff. And, again, you have to deal with self. It's like looking in a mirror.
Right.
The only person you're going to see if you're standing there by yourself is yourself. So.
Right, exactly. Because I mean, I've never been through domestic violence, but I mean, I've been through some situations before that it triggered, you know, when you start talking about it or even writing it down, it brings back other stuff, even some things that you blocked out, but you, and then, you know, you didn't remember until you start writing or talk about it.
Exactly.
Excuse me. So, but, the, you know, I always tell people, and I talk to a lot of people on my radio station about domestic violence. And I was, you know, I always tell them it's always good to kind of get it off your chest and not hold all of that stuff in, you know, just to get it out in the atmosphere off of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes easier said than done. It all depends on what the person is going through, because most of the time when people are in abusive relationships, they don't want to talk about it for fear of their abuser finding out they're talking about it, for fear of being embarrassed or that someone would judge them because of them either staying in the abuse or not being able to get help. And then plus they don't know who they really can trust. So it's people like myself who start organizations like this. And that's one of the reasons why my organization has the word voice in it, because I've become a voice for these people who have lost their voice. I'm somebody who they don't know from a can of paint. They can call me, trust me, and then I can get them to the resources needed, especially if they're trying to get out immediately.
Right. Exactly. I got you. It's funny that you say that, because I actually had someone I knew, well, actually a couple of people, they had reached out to talk to me. And the one lady, I didn't really know that she was in any trouble. I found out last year, actually, and it didn't work out for her good at the end. But, you know, she was kind of talking to me, but at the same time she wasn't. When I look back on it, I'm like, she really was trying to reach out to me, and I wasn't catching it. Like, you know how people give you signs, but you just don't get with it, you know, get what they're saying. Basically,
trying to tell you, yes, because they're not forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So it's just about, you know, finding out the signs and symptoms. Do you know, I mean, do you mind sharing some things that could be possible signs that people are in help, that they need help?
Isolation is a big one, especially if it's someone who you knew at one point in time was somebody who was very outgoing. they were not necessarily the life of the party, but they were, you know, someone who was readily available. You know, sometimes, don't get me wrong, we do go through our phases where we need to, you know, regroup, we need to digress and reprocess ourselves, do different things of life. But if you have that person who's very, very outgoing, who kind of no nonsense, and then all of a sudden you see them in a relationship, and it could be any type of relationship. It could be interpersonal relationships, meaning, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, 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 boyfriend, boyfriend, however it works, because domestic violence has no creed, color, gender, or anything like that. So it really doesn't matter what the relationship is. But if you have somebody who now is less available, less talkative, and you see them just isolating themselves with this person more, it may be something to look for. And I'm not saying that, because when people start new relationships, don't get me wrong, you're trying to get to know the person that you're with. But eventually you still have to intertwine or interweave your personal life with this relationship, because if they're going to be a part of you and a part of your life, they have to be around your family, your friends, interacting with your job, things of that nature. So isolation is a big one. What else can I say? If you see, just kind of like nervous all the time, if you like mention something that may be related to a relationship or something that you notice that they're doing, like the withdrawal or, you know, them not going to work or missing more days at work than they usually do, and you start questioning them and they like kind of backpedal out of an answer, or they avoid the situation altogether, or they just seem like kind of on edge. For myself personally, I wore a mask a lot of the time, so a lot of times people didn't, I'm not going to say a lot of times, people didn't know what I was actually going through. Isolation was a big thing for me. Those people who love me and care for me, you know, they still reached out to me. A lot of people dropped off because they got tired of, you know, being the only person in the relationship, meaning that, you know, they were constantly calling me, I wasn't returning the phone call, or they were constantly wanting to spend time with me and I wasn't available. Mm-hmm. But like close family members, best friends, you know, they never necessarily dropped the ball. They just gave me my space while they watched. what other signs can you look for? Of course, if you see like new bruises popping up, you know, something that and they all of a sudden get extra clumsy. You know, we all have a stress of clumsiness. I know I do. I will trip over my feet from time to time. You know, I will bump into a wall, but not enough to whereas I'm constantly bruising myself. Because it could be two things. It could be a health reason, or, again, they could be in some type of domestic situation that they don't want to talk about. And if they're always making excuses, if they're always wearing extra makeup, if they're always, you know, avoiding you like the plague now because they have these issues, those are just, you know, a couple things to look for.
Right, right. It's crazy because I actually was looking at, and I don't know how I came across this video from Oprah a couple of years ago. And the one lady, she was being abused by her husband and son, or her husband was forcing her son to do it. But the lady's boss had recognized some signs. And now that you're speaking out, that was some of the signs that she said. But she noticed that when she knew that the lady's husband was out of town, she was always happy and chipper. As soon as he came back home, she went right back into isolation. So, all right. I mean, it's just good to know for people that don't know the signs and symptoms. So, yeah. But so when you, what made you write your book?
Actuality, it probably was time. I had started writing it, I can honestly say, probably through the push of other people, really. Probably started writing it maybe like in 2011, 2012, and then I just kind of put it down because, again, I had to deal with a whole bunch of emotions that I wasn't quite ready to deal with. But what happened was the organization got started because I actually shared my story at a domestic violence walk back in 2000, and I believe it was 15. And people began to inbox me, well, you know, what did you do? We're so glad you got out of it. You know, thank God for your testimony, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So my best friend, who's also my pastor and my life coach, she, her and her husband sat me down. They were like, okay, so what are you going to do with this? And I was like, absolutely nothing. Because once you start something like this, you take on a bigger responsibility. And I call myself an introvert, extrovert. I can be very outgoing and not necessarily life for the party, but I'm very talkative. I do things. I engage with people. But at the same time, I enjoy being by myself. So for me to open up this door to now assist people or try to get people help, that means that now I have to be more of an extrovert probably at times that I don't want to be. So writing the book was a challenge because I had to get information out there. I felt like I had to get information out there. That's one thing. Two, the reason why it took 10 years to write, I think everything happens in God's timing. And what happened was I had spoke at a women's event in August of 2018 and met up with a young lady by the name of Makita Moore. And I joke around with people a lot, you know, and I was bringing home conversation with her, and I ran into her again at a live museum that I was a part of for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I seen her, and I said, hey, you know, you're going to be my Facebook friend. And I was joking, but I wasn't joking, because like I said, when God gives me things, I just kind of go with the flow, and I believe that was a God-ordained relationship at that time. And when I introduced myself to her, we became Facebook friends, and we laughed and joked, and then she started posting things on social media about her doing a book tour and about her sharing her story around the country. Well, one of the visions for My Voice Matters is to not just go national, but to go global. And what I mean by national, I mean I want to have connections in every state. So if somebody needs help in those states, I can get them the resources they need. Or if somebody wants to pick up and move, I can connect them with someone in another state they're interested in going in, and they would have those resources.
Right.
So when I started hearing this from her, you know, my wheel started turning. I believe God started speaking to me, and I decided to tell her I was interested in a tour. But what happened was first we began to have, like, small conversations, and I would give her suggestions about things that she could do to enhance the tour. And then, like I said, I kept fighting back and forth with God. God was like, you need to join the tour. And I was like, no, I don't feel like traveling. You need to join the tour. I'm like, no, I don't feel like traveling. And I ended up becoming a co-host on her radio show. And name of the radio show is called Art of Transparency, which means we would go on there and be very transparent about any topic that was given. And when I signed up for the tour, my best friend, life coach, said, okay, well, you need something to take on this tour with you. Let's do this. And she got me in touch with a marketing company that was able to help me get my book out in 30 days.
Okay.
And it was, I mean, from there it just became, it just started rolling in. So I actually started with this marketing company December 18th of 2018, and my book was published January 17th of 2019. It was, of course, done e-book first, and then hard copy shortly followed. And I'm in the process, and this is the first time I'm actually mentioning this on your show, so those people who are listening, I'm actually in the process of putting my book on audio.
Okay.
So within the next month or so, my book should be on audio, if not sooner. So.
Right. So you let me come back ask you this question. You said it took 30
mm-hmm.
days to get the book out, but how long did it take you to write the book?
30 days with the help of this marketing company and my best friend, of course. She played a major part in it and is the one that's kind of pushing me to do this next book as well. I mean, it was something that I need to do, and I need to get it done quickly. And so it was something. And it's a short read. That's another thing too. You know, people are not. If you we're in a microwave society now, to be perfectly honest with you, and we know this. So people are not reading the long novels that you used to get by. I can't think of an author off the top of my head. Oh, the lady who wrote Harry Potter,
like
T.K. Rowling,
or something. Right.
Or you know, people are reading like self help. Like Oprah Winfrey books, Michelle Obama's Believe book, Ayanna
mm-hmm.
Van Zandt, books like that. They'll read longer books like that, but if you notice, those two are not necessarily long books. They're short read books, with the exception of Michelle Obama's book, because it went into a lot of detail about her life and growing up and then getting into the White House with her husband. But most people now are reading short read books because we don't have time to sit down like you would when you were a kid in school and that's all you had to do was read. Or if you're somebody who just likes to sit at home and have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea and just sit and read and not engage in TV or social media or anything like this, like our society has evolved to. So it's a short read. It's only, I think, 100 and something pages, and some of those I really can probably put it down to 85 or 90 pages because, you know, you got your introduction, you got your acknowledgments, and I have resources in the back, so it might be like an 87 or 90 something page book. That, of course, I didn't need as much time as I would of writing a novel. So that helped the process as well too, and it's a book that tells, of course, my story. It's a book that's very transparent because, again, when we're talking about domestic violence, I don't say that the abused is at fault, but, however, and I'm going to use the word however, because I don't want to negate everything I said before. The however is there are some things that we allow to happen when we see them, signs, red flags, whatever have you, that we tend to ignore, which causes the domino effect of us placing ourselves in these predicaments or these situations that once we're in, we find it very hard, if not impossible, to get out of.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, I'm very transparent with that. And then, again, I give, like, tips and signs to look for. And then also, like I said, the resources in the back of the different agencies throughout the country that you can hook up with if you're not in the same state that I'm in.
Right. Now, let me ask you a question. I've had different people on the show for mm-hmm. domestic violence, and they're telling their story. But I just want to ask, I was curious to ask this question. I never asked anybody this question. Say, for instance, if you was in an abused relationship and you decide to get into another relationship, do you think it's good for the person to share that with the new person, either to tell them that what I'm not going to tolerate? Because a lot of times, I don't know why in my mind I think that, because I see a lot of people jump from one abusive relationship to another one. And sometimes I don't know in my mind if they getting with this next person, and then that person said, well, hey, she let the other guy abuse her, why I can't abuse her? Do you think that's a good thing to share with people, especially in the beginning of being in a relationship?
It depends. And the reason why I say it depends is because everybody's different and everybody handles things differently. You might have, like you just gave the example, abusers to me are very narcissistic. So if you, and generally, for lack of better words, unfortunately, we tend to be attracted to something about a narcissist, and it kind of repeats, and that's how we get into a cycle effect. I'll use my ex-husband as an example because he was my abuser. My ex-husband was very charismatic, very charming. He wasn't bad looking on the eyes. The life of the party would give you the shirt off his back when it came to people outside of our relationship. Inside of our relationship, of course, it was Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So something totally different. So now, answering your question, when I go into new relationships, and this is me being transparent again, it was very difficult for me to get into any type of relationship. As a matter of fact, I had a relationship that just ended, I want to say October, November-ish, and we were together for 18 months and thought it was the perfect relationship. And I believe that because of some of my issues that I'm still holding on to that I haven't totally healed from, started the demise of the relationship. I'm not going to say that that's what ended the relationship, but it started it. And it took me 9 years to get into that relationship. Now, have I dated in between? Yes, ma'am. Have I seen red flags that would cause me to hightail it the other way? Yes, ma'am. As far as talking about it in the beginning of a relationship, it just depends on how you feel, if you're comfortable. For me, again, without actually telling, and I'm quite sure we'll go into the real reasons why I actually came out and started telling everybody my real actual testimony, I put people on notice right away just because of that reason, because I didn't want any – I still felt to a certain extent for a long period of time that I was unsafe, meaning that I thought that my ex-husband or somebody else may come and do something to me, and it's all in my mindset. But at the same time, dating other people, you don't want to put them in a predicament where they will be unsafe because of you, okay? So for me, yes, I told some things in the beginning to let them know, but some people may not feel comfortable doing that, and they just want to see for themselves. But again, I think to a certain extent, and this is some of the things that I talk about when I speak around the country, that it's unfair to a new person that you're trying, if you're trying to build a relationship, you know, if you're just dating, then because dating is different from relationship. If you're just dating, then no, I don't think you should have to divulge everything in conversation. If you're talking about building something with this person and being with somebody, by all means, yes, you need to give them the information to just let them know what they might possibly be getting themselves into, because mentally speaking, we still deal with a lot of stuff. Emotional,
right.
Physical, and verbal is all a part of it. And emotional and mental scars heal a whole lot slower than physical. So
right.
For me, I told people, like I said, just because I want them to be safe. But the minute I saw red flags too, I would kind of be like, I'm just done. I don't even give explanation. I just quit calling you. I quit talking to you, which to a certain extent may not be fair. And the reason why I say that is because some men are just men. And some men, and I'm talking about for me because I'm heterosexual, but some men are just men and they do men things. And some men things may come off to somebody who's been in a relationship with an abuser as abusive, but it just may be a male type trait, if that makes any sense. So
right.
I would tell people all the time, it's about having conversation and communicating, which for me for a long period of time, and even still to this day, is sometimes very difficult for me when it comes to being in a relationship. So, but if you see something that does not sit right with you because you saw it with your abuser, the best thing I can say do is if there's somebody that you're thinking about building something with, is to sit down and have a conversation with them. Just like you would tell them, hey, it bothers me, excuse me, when you chew your food with your mouth open, or when you talk, or you talk with a mouth full of food. That's a pet peeve of mine. You also should have to think about the same. You should think about it the same way. Say, for instance, this person, every time you go somewhere, they feel like they need to know your every move. Now, most men will say that that's because they're concerned and they feel like it's their job to protect you. A narcissist or an abuser does it for control. So if I'm in a relationship with you and every time you call me, you like, well, where you at? I'm going to feel some kind of way. So it would be in my best interest to tell you, say, hey, look, if this is you being concerned, I appreciate your concern, but I'm not your responsibility. So for you to be constantly checking up on me like this is a problem for me, and this is the reason why it's a problem for me. When I was in this relationship with this person, this is what happened, and it became a real issue. Now, this person can do one of two things. They can accept it and try to change or try to not necessarily, I won't say change, but accommodate you because you've told them how you felt, or it's a deal breaker, and they don't want to be bothered because they feel like they're supposed to be protecting you. Either way it goes, if you let people know up front, then that's a way of nipping a bad situation or, you know, having issues later on if you nip it right in the bud right away is what I'm trying to say. So every relationship, to go back to kind of sum it up, every relationship is going to be different, and you have to use your best judgment to decide whether or not you want to discuss your situation beforehand. Or if you just kind of want to wait until you see red flags. But sometimes when people see red flags, they just run. They don't even talk about it, which is another issue.
Right. Well, I'm glad you put it that way because that makes more sense to me where, you know, the part where you talked about having putting other people's lives in danger. So that makes more sense that it's good because, I mean, for years I always thought about it, but I never asked anybody that. So it makes sense when you look at it that way. Wow. So let me ask you this: when you finally said you were done with your husband, what was it? If you don't mind me asking, what was it that made you say enough is enough?
I was just tired. I tell people all the time, R. Kelly song says it best, when a woman's fed up, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. I loved my ex-husband. You know, nobody gets married, I don't believe, with the intent of getting a divorce unless, of course, it's something that's calculated, something that you all both decided in the beginning. It's got something to do with money. It's got something to do with, you know, a situation that you may be in, but I don't know anybody who's ever come to me and say, well, I'm getting married to be divorced in 5 years. You know what I'm saying? So when I got married. I wanted my marriage to work. My ex-husband was also a habitual cheater. There were several women that I found out about throughout the course of our marriage, but there was one woman in particular that he had a girlfriend for 7 years. And, when one of the incidents happened and he promised never to put his hands on me again, one of the stipulations I had was we had to move. And in that, we purchased the house. And one of the other stipulations was with him not putting his hands on me again, that this particular woman, he had to let go of. I didn't know how he was going to do it, didn't care how he did it, but he had to let go of her if he wanted me to stay and work this stuff out with him. Now, mind you, in my mind, because of the incident that happened, I really was already pretty much done then, but now I'm being strategic to try to get a way of escape. At the time, we were living with my parents, and I didn't want anything to happen to my parents. I didn't want my parents really knowing my business, even though I lived in the house and I was being abused in the house right underneath their nose. They never knew anything. And now this was my way of getting him away from their home, okay? So when I'm doing that... I pretty much was making a strategic move, kind of, sort of, but at the same time, in the back of my mind, also hoping that maybe this move, maybe this fresh start, maybe him promising never put his hands on me again, because he had never made that promise before, that things would change. Once we got into the house, things were okay. They were not better, but, of course, we're dealing with years of abuse. We're dealing with habitual cheating. We're dealing with lies. We're dealing with a whole bunch of stuff that we're trying to fix without counseling. Because he didn't want to go to counseling. So when I found out, maybe about 6 or 7 months into us moving into the new house, that he was still dealing with the young lady, I kind of just started, like, totally shutting down. Like, my conversation with him would become real short. Intimacy was at an all-time low, so much so that it aggravated him even more. And I didn't know how those days would turn out either. And then finally in July of 2008, I just had a conversation with God. I was like, I'm done. I need an exodus, and I need it quickly. And I wasn't specific in my prayers, but I began looking for a second job. I began looking for an apartment, and nothing was coming through because I was just going to just up and leave. October 26th of 2008, I got my exodus, but not the way I planned it. My ex-husband threw me out of our home and then began to tell people when I wouldn't come back that he knew I wasn't going to come back, or he was afraid I wouldn't come back because he had been abusing me. So this is when everybody starts now knowing that I was in an abusive relationship because I wasn't I hadn't told anybody. So now I got family and friends looking at me like, you know, why didn't you tell us? Why didn't you come to us? We've always loved you. You could have talked to us. You could have told us. How do you tell people that you're being abused by somebody who you love and you still want to be with?
Right.
So now we're talking about judgment, and I couldn't be judged, or I didn't want to be judged. So, and now I'm dealing with all these cans of worms being open now, and, you know, just people coming at me, questioning me. Now they're getting why I was isolated. Now they're getting why I wouldn't come to certain events. Well, now they're getting why I only hung with his family as opposed to my family, because he never wanted to do anything with my family but always made me do things with his family.
Right.
So anytime I had to go to anything with my family, either I could not go or I had to go alone. So that was how I finally decided that I decided in July that I wanted to be done, but it was out of my hands as far as how the exodus happened. I knew it was going to happen.
Right.
Didn't know how it was going to happen. I tried to start planning a way of safe escape, but at the same time, it did not happen the way I thought it was going to happen. So I tell people when they're praying about things like that to be very specific in their prayer, even if they need to write it down, because God not only hears what we say audibly, he sees what we write, and he also knows what our thoughts are.
Right. And yeah, you definitely have to be safe coming out of that, and not just safe for you, but safe for everybody in your family, because like some people are here just literally crazy. And
yes, ma'am.
I'll just sit here thinking about Jennifer Hudson's family. Like, you just got to not just be safe for you, but safe for everybody. And then it just makes so much sense to me more. And it's crazy, the more I talk to people, more things start clicking in my head, like, wow. It made me look at some of the people that's in my background that I personally know that's isolated. And it makes me wonder if that's what's going on. So even with you not speaking, our family members need to start paying attention to those things also, too.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll just, as you speak, it's just bringing things back to me. Make me start waking up and paying attention to things. Wow. I was trying to see what else your company, your business for Life Matters. What are your guys? What is your mission and your vision when it comes to that?
For My Voice Matters is a not-for-profit organization that I started again in 2015, actually launched in 2016. And our mission is to amplify voices, take action. Of course, now that I'm on the spot, I can't think of – it's four A's. Amplify, action – anyway, I'll figure it out before we got the show, and I'll say it again. But basically, my mission is really just to get right. Because, you throw me on a spot like that, sometimes it comes, sometimes it doesn't. And I really haven't had to talk about – I haven't really talked about the organization in a while, more so the book or just the fact being of the tour, but neither here nor there. Basically, what For My Voice Matters is a nonprofit organization that brings about education. And long-term goals, of course, I want to eventually probably have a shelter, or I want to be able to have a building where I can give out resources, even if it's not necessarily housing or things of that nature. What I do right now is I educate. I educate about the mental part of it as well as the physical part of it, the emotional and the spiritual part of it, because abuse is not just physical, and a lot of people tend to forget that. They think there's somebody who, if you're not being beat up, if you don't have no bruises or anything like that, that you're not being abused. And you think about it, a lot of times in relationships, we say hurtful things to people. We talk about people, we belittle them, whatever have you, and that is a form of abuse. It just depends on how far or to the extreme that someone will take it to make you doubt yourself, lose your self-esteem, and to feel some kind of way about agreeing about how that person feels about you, where now you don't understand or you don't know how you feel about yourself. So
right.
I have intimate conversations. I didn't get to do one last year because I toured, but I have intimate conversations, and where it's no more than maybe 30 to 40 people, and we have a conversation. We talk about abuse. We talk about the signs of abuse. We talk about how you can notice the signs of abuse. If somebody you think is being abused, how do you handle them without judging them? I bring people on who have either been abused, seen someone been abused, lost someone to domestic abuse, educators, social workers, people that work with the Department of Corrections. I try to bring everybody in. We have a roundtable discussion. I let people ask questions and give them information. I also added suicide prevention to the organization because in September of 2018, the person who I was just in a relationship with, we lost his daughter to suicide on September 13th of that year. And with his permission and the oldest daughter's permission, who I call my daughter as well, we added a branch onto it called TAB, which stands for Trendy Ann Banks. It also stands for Talk About Bullying, because one of the reasons that was revealed after everything was said and done was that she was being bullied at school because of her just different things, how kids can be cruel. But she was being bullied at school. So now what I do is I try to get into schools, I try to get into churches, I try to get into just arenas and building my own arena and building my own tribe so I can get out here, because people, not just teenagers, because she was 15 at the time, but adults deal with suicide issues. I myself am a suicide survivor. I've tried to take my life at least four times. Let me just be clear. So I tried to take my life four times. One time before I got married and three times within my marriage, because I felt like death would be easier than me having to tell somebody that I was being abused or have to still be abused. So with For My Voice Matters right now, it's really about educating to give people a voice that feel like they don't have a voice. Everything is confidentiality. People inbox me to ask me questions. I give them resources. I give them suggestions, because everybody's relationship is different. Your abusive relationship is not going to be like my abusive relationship. That's just like our DNA is all different. No two people are the same. You may have similarities, but no two people are the same. So I can't tell you that what worked for me when I left is going to work for you.
Right.
But let's sit down together and have a conversation, and let's figure out what's the safest way to get you out of that situation.
Right. Well, I'm glad that, you're standing up to, tell your story and have an organization like this where people can reach out. Because you are, there's people out here that's lost and they don't know who to turn to and where to go. Tip, if you can share with people the type of abuse is that, because a lot of people think that abuse is just hitting or verbal, but are there any other kind of abuses that, you could kind of like wake people up to know, am I really truly in an abusive relationship?
Most definitely, like I said, one of the most common ones are mental, and we just don't think about it. And that's when somebody's belittling you, down talking you, calling you out your name, telling you one of the biggest things was, he would tell me, oh, you're beautiful, I think you're perfect just the way you are, but then behind closed doors, well, you've gotten fat, nobody's gonna want you but me. You might as well stay with me. You might as well be happy because nobody wants you. You're ugly. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a catch-22, because now you're constantly chiseling away at my self-esteem.
Right.
When we talk about financial abuse, there are people out here who are in relationships and the abuser, and let me be very clear, there are women abusers as well. They're not just men. They're not just all men. There are women abusers as well, and people that control checks, like you working and bring home your check to me, and I'll divvy out what I feel you need. Now, mind you, there are some marriages where people or relationships where people are not financially capable of handling stuff, so there's somebody in the relationship that's stronger, and that's something totally different. If I bring home my check and I say, okay, well, you know, I can't be trusted to pay the bills on time, but you're good at paying the bills on time, and you're good at budgeting, of course I'm going to, you know, trust you with my money because that's not an area that I'm capable of or that I'm strong in. So that's something totally different. But when you have people out there that say, well, bring your check in, you know what, no, I'm not going to give you any money today. I don't care about the kids not having no Pampers. Or, no, you can't go to the grocery store. Or if you go to the grocery store, you can only get these items there just for me. You know, people actually deal with that on a daily basis. Not having food or formula for their babies, not having Pampers because the abuser is hoarding the money or doing what they want with the money as far as things like that are concerned. So we've done mental, we've done financial, spiritual. People that will use God in a relationship to say, you know, well, God is not pleased with you, and this is why I do what I do, and the Bible says this about marriage, the Bible says this about submission, the Bible says this, this, that, and the other. Or controlling when and if they go to church, or controlling what church they go to. Or I can give a couple examples. I mean, one of the biggest things is my ex-husband grew up in a church. And, of course, when we got married, I said I wanted us to go to church together. And, of course, he played the game for a little while. And then he came to church with me a couple times. And I was like, well, do you want to join here with me? And he was like, well, no, I don't want to join this church because I see that there are several ministers around your lead pastor that are gay. And no, I couldn't join no church like this. So my next thing was, okay, well, you can't join this church, and that's how you feel. Of course, I didn't feel that way because I belong to the church. But if that's the way you feel, then let's find a church together to go to. And every Sunday, it was always an excuse. But then on the Sundays I would go to church because I was active in ministry, it would become a problem if I wasn't home by a certain time. Or it would become a problem. Well, no, you can't go with that. You can't go to this particular outing at the church because I need you at home. At home to do what? And then I will be at home because you asked me to, and then you would disappear. So it's all about control. Mental, spiritual, financial, emotional. They just kind of play with your emotions all the time. They like to make you cry. They like to make you feel some kind of way. You know, what may, like a death. Let's just say I lost a loved one, and I'm taking the loved one, the hit hard. Better yet, I can use an example. I have a friend, and unfortunately, their brother committed suicide. Okay, and a couple months afterwards, the wife, because this person and everybody deals with grief differently. So you don't know what this person is feeling, you know, male, female, indifferent. Everybody deals with grief differently. So I think maybe a month or maybe 2 months after this person took their lives, this person was at home watching TV, playing video games, just sitting around the house on their off day. And the spouse came in and was like, you know, well, let's go out and do something. And the person was like, you know, I'm just not feeling it today. You know, I just want to kind of sit at home, relax. It's my off day, you know. And she started in on him, and one of the last things she said to him was, well, when are you going to get over him dying? It's been 2 months. That to me, as far as being insensitive and cruel, is a form of emotional abuse because you can't get your way. You're not sensitive enough to understand that this person may still be. I mean, because, like, again, my mother died 3 years ago. I still grieve my mom.
Right.
I grieve her in my own way, and you know, it's not always out in the public. I'm not in front of people bawling or whatever have you, but it still bothers me. I don't know what it's like to lose a sibling. Well, no, I take that back. I do. I have an older brother who passed away, but we weren't all that close. But I grieve him differently than I would my mom. Do I still think about my brother? Of course I do. You know what I'm saying? But do I have the tears that I have for my mom? No, I don't. And the relationship that this person had with their brother at one point in time was very, very tight.
Right.
And then for you to lose them, not only did you lose them, you didn't lose them to a sickness. You didn't lose them to an accident. You didn't lose them to somebody else taking their life. You lost them to them taking their own life. So I can only imagine how it plays in your head. What could I have done differently? Because even with us losing the young lady Trinity in September. Sometimes, because she and I were becoming close, and we had started having a conversation 2 weeks before, and I just knew we were about to start building a relationship, a better relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It runs through my head to this day. What could I have done differently? Should I have given her my phone number instead of waiting on her to contact me through her father? Should I have been, you know, a little bit more adamant after the fact? You know what I'm saying? You know, after we had a conversation and she said that she wanted to build a relationship with me and she wanted to hang out with me and she wanted to get to know me better, like her older sister knew me, I felt kind of responsible. Like, what could I have done different? So I can only imagine what this person felt like in losing his brother, who was a grown man and not a child.
Right.
And then to have your spouse, somebody who loves you unconditionally, who married you for better or for worse, who's supposed to be there through your rough times, to pick you up and not to tear you down, wants to get on
right.
you about not wanting to go out the house, and then they throw that in and tell you to get over.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, those are the stages of abuse.
It's funny you say that because I never thought about it until you just spoke it, that I remember being in a relationship with someone, and my mom had passed away March 3rd. But that following year, I was in a relationship, and that person wanted me to forget about my mom. Was like, just help them celebrate their birthday. And I'm like, what in the heck? Like you said, still to this day, I still grieve my mother, and it's been 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was crazy. It just, like I said, when I talk to people, stuff be popping in my head, like, oh, my God. Because just that person told me, well, it's my birthday. Can you grieve another time? Like, who says things like that? But
people who are inconsiderate and they're selfish and they only think about themselves.
Right, right. And their birthday was on the same day my mom passed away. That was the craziest thing. So yeah, I needless to say, I got rid of them like a couple of weeks later because I was like, I don't have time for that. So wow. You waking me up to some things today, sis.
I'm glad I can help, and hopefully other people will get something from this too.
Yeah. So how can people get in contact with you or your book and things? I mean, get a copy of your book and things like that.
Well, I'm on Facebook, of course. It's Renee Cooper. That's R-E-N-A with a little accent over the Renee, last name Cooper. I have a business page. If you can't find me on Facebook with my personal page, the For My Voice Matters page, it's the number 4, My Voice Matters. And then I have an author page. It's Y Renee Cooper. Any three of those ways on Facebook. I am on Instagram and Twitter, not as popular on those, not as functioning on those as much as I should be. We'll be getting more into the habit of doing that this year. My email is formyvoicematters@gmail.com or either yrcooper11@yahoo.com. Phone number 708-713-3686 is my business line. But probably the best way to kind of contact me would be via Facebook. I do respond to all messages on any page that you message me on. So that's good. So I will give people a little tidbit since I know we're getting close to the end. The reason why the organization is called For My Voice Matters is for the number of times that I was shot. And my voice matters because I lost my voice in the midst of my marriage. And once I got it back, I promised God I would never lose it again. So if that means I need to be a voice for myself or a voice for others, there is a voice in the earth that's going to yell loud and scream out about domestic violence. My testimony is this. I was coming home from a church service 2 months after being thrown out of my home, and an assailant came from behind a tree, told me don't move, and shot me 4 times and walked away. I'm giving you the brief scenario because we're coming close to the end of it. No, it was not my ex-husband who shot me. Do I believe that he sent someone to shoot me? That's my belief. It has not been proven. The shooter was never found, neither was the gun, and they were not able to connect any dots. So, again, that's my belief, not that it happened. So I tell people when they hear the story, you know, you make your own conclusions. But, again, I was thrown out 2 months and 2 days before I was actually shot in front of my parents' home on December 28, 2008. All my vital organs were hit except for my heart. One bullet was an in and out. One was a graze. Two of the bullets ricocheted throughout my entire body. That's how my organs and everything were hit. I was paralyzed for 2.5 days because one of the bullets put the size of a quarter in my 12th vertebrae and nicked my spinal cord. So, again, in ICU for 2.5 days, paralyzed for those 2.5 days, up walking by the 5th day and out of the hospital by the 8th day. And just to look at me, if you go through my Facebook page, my books, I mean my pictures or anything like that, if you just look at me, unless I tell my story, no one would know that I was a gunshot survivor, a gunshot victim or survivor.
Wow. Wow.
So yeah, that's the part, that's why the book is titled Assassination Avoided, Destiny Defined. Because
right.
It was an assassination tip because the person did not take anything off me, not my keys, my truck. I didn't carry a purse, but they didn't even try to take anything off of me. And, of course, like I said, I believe it was an attempt on my life, but we all know that God has bigger plans for all of us. So the destiny-defined part, the destiny-defined part is my destiny is still being defined. I have no clue what tomorrow holds. Every day changes for me. So.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it's crazy because even through that and with you telling me your story, I believe that too, and it's still another way for him to have control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another way. But, yes, God do have a plan for all of us, and you just got to figure out what that, you know, what it is that your purpose, what is the purpose of, you know, I mean, you went through this, but there's a purpose behind it. And it's about a learned lesson and teaching, learning for yourself and teach other people, you know, so that they can wake up and pay attention. So, yes, ma'am. Well, the next thing I was going to ask you, if you could say anything to the world, what would you say to them?
Oh, wow, I think I've said quite a bit. I guess the major thing this is about putting out information and letting people know that assistance is there. These organizations were not invented just to be organizations. We're organizations because we actually want to help. We actually either have resources or connect you to resources to get you to help. When it comes to domestic violence and suicide, just like with anything in life, we don't get to do anything until something hits us close to home. And I still didn't want to do domestic violence, even though it was happening to me. Like I said, it wasn't until I lost my girlfriend 4 months after I got shot, and her sister wanted me to tell my story at a domestic violence walk in her honor. Some 6 years later. And when I came out of the hospital, a lot of people still didn't know I was being abused. So when people would call and say, well, could you share your story, could you share a testimony? My testimony was about me being a gunshot survivor. It was not about me surviving abuse. The surviving abuse didn't come out really until I told my story and it ended up on Facebook, and that's the video that you posted, and it had over like 7,000 views within a matter of 72 hours.
Wow.
So that's how that all kicked off. But, you know, just like with anything, we don't like talking about things. So my thing is I tell people all the time, no matter how scared you are, no matter how fearful you are, your best bet is to trust a stranger when it comes to issues like that than trusting someone around you if you're afraid you're going to be judged or if you're afraid for those reasons. So, you know, I tell people all the time, even when it comes to suicide prevention, you need to know that there's somebody who wants to hear from you. And even, like I said, I've survived it myself. And even though I might have been mad the next day when I woke up, I think about now, if I'd have took my life in the midst of my marriage, how many people would have not been helped by what I'm doing today?
Exactly.
Because I know without people actually – I know there are some people who have inboxed me and said that something I've said has helped them, something I've said has, you know, changed their mind about something. But I can only imagine how many people have seen the videos that did not comment because they're either in something like that or they're trying to come out of something like that, and now they've seen that somebody else could come out too, and they listened to what I said and they made a safe strategy. Those may be the people I never hear from. But I believe if I'm helping one person, then I've done what I'm supposed to do, whether I know about it or not, and that we can make this world a better place because of it.
Ma'am.
We're dealing with a new generation of people. If we can get these kids, especially young people who are actually watching other people being abused or they feel like abuse is the only way that they know how to love or things like that, if I can get to this next generation, I think that we can definitely make a turn. So I'm taking all school invites, church invites, any platform that allows me to get the story out there so I can get to these youth. And I'm talking from like 22 and younger. You know, one of your questions we talked about before, what's my target audience? People.
Right.
I know that's a wide, that's very wide, it's not defining, but when you think about domestic violence, like I said before, no creed, no gender, no color, no age.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if I had a target audience, it would be those people who could listen, comprehend, and understand, and help me get the word out.
Right.
But I really want to get to the younger generation because I think our youth, they've been so misled, mishandled. They're dealing with a whole bunch of stuff that we didn't deal with coming up. I mean, I'm proud to say, even though I used to fight all the time about telling my age, I'm 49 years old. And half the stuff, I mean, I would say three-fourths of the stuff that these kids deal with nowadays, I would have never thought I had to deal with, ever.
Right.
So, yeah, that would be my target audience, and that would be what I have to tell people. Just talk about it.
Right.
Conversation cures a lot of things.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad I was able to have you on my show.
Thank you. I'm glad you had me on your show. That was awesome. I appreciate you so much.
And I would like to also connect with you more outside of the radio, you know, so because, like I said, I have a women's group, so a lot of women talk with me, you know, through my women's group. And I got a lot of friends that probably would love to connect with you, too. So, but I'm glad
I appreciate
that
it so much. Thank you. And I do travel. So, look, I'm not just local. I do travel. I did.
Right.
I traveled the country last year, and I also spoke in Mexico. So I do travel.
Oh, wow. Well, all right. Well, this is Miss Yolanda Renee Cooper.
Yes, ma'am.
And CEO of For My Voice Matters. So make sure you guys look her up. And the name of your book again, Miss Renee?
Assassination Avoided, Destiny Defined. And it's available on Amazon.
All right. Well, I appreciate you. Thank you, sis.
Thank you so much, Miss Faith. I appreciate you, too. I'm glad we connected.
All right. Well, have a great day.
You too.
You're welcome. I'm going to end the show out with Ruben Stutter. You are so beautiful because we are. Everyone is beautiful in your own way. Have a great day.
Beautiful.
I just wanna make you feel
beautiful. met a lady.